The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Here comes the former president. Let's just listen into this.
President Trump, will you come speak to us, President Trump?
Oh, that was just awful. Wow. And he went right into the courtroom. We thought that he was going to come up to that camera, but change of plans to what we had been advised. And he just walked straight in there.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, the news continues to play out. Good afternoon. I'm Drew Mariani. Thank you for joining me today. The president, of course, the indictment charges him now with 34 crimes over hush money payments to two different women. Throughout the day, in fact, coming up in a few moments, we'll dive into this with a presidential scholar. What's this mean? What's the law behind all of this? And a little bit later, we'll, as news continues to come in, break it down for you a little later in the broadcast. But the indictment against former President Trump charges him with 34 criminal counts of falsifying business records and conspiracy in connection with hush money payments to two women before the 2016 presidential elections. Now, the indictment says that those payments, they were done to suppress claims by those women, you know, of having, you know, sex with Donald Trump in order to avoid those accounts harming his chances of winning the election over Hillary Clinton. I'm just thinking about Access Hollywood. That was a bomb that exploded right before, you know, it was an October surprise. Had no impact. I thought it would have derailed him back during that particular election. So I don't think this would. The question is, will this hold up? There, a Manhattan Supreme Court grand jury indicted the president after hearing testimony for several months about a hush money payment. And then Trump separately is under supposedly criminal investigation by the Department of Justice and a state prosecutor in Georgia for efforts to reverse his 2020 election loss to Biden. A lot to talk about today regarding this. I'll try to synthesize it. I'll try to present it to you in a way that's understandable. And all of that is coming up in just a few moments. But first, there's some other big news I want to get to on the international scene. Donald Trump, believe me, he'll be filling the headlines all day long. There's plenty of time for us to talk about him. You can always get in on the conversation here, too. Finland, this is big news. Finland has been officially admitted into NATO. Now, the Nordic country has about an 800-mile-long border with Russia, and Russian officials are not happy with that decision. You know, I think about Vladimir Putin right now. I turn back the hands of time about a year and a month, and I'm thinking, if he could do it again, would he have made the decisions that he made? Take a look at what it's cost his economy. Take a look at the resurrection of NATO. Take a look at Finland now. Coming into there. France 24 was reporting that their ratification was completed in well under a year. That's the fastest membership process in the alliance's recent history. And as Western allies are strengthening ties, Russia's foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, he said in an interview that, you know, Russia may get tough. This is what they, they say this a lot. I don't know how to read it, but I don't take anything, you know, lightly. He says, Russia may get tough with a hostile European Union. The U.S. and its European allies are now backing Finland's next-door neighbor, Sweden. And we'll see about a mission to the alliance as well. So that should happen as well. Major defeat for Russia. He was worried about NATO and, you know, forces on his border. But what will we see come from this? I encourage you, please. Today's the anniversary of the death of Francisco Martyr, one of the great Fatima Seers. And they lived at a time when war was raging and a Second World War would soon loom. Let's call upon their intercession. I beg you to please pray for peace in the world. You know, we see China and Brazil want to get away from the U.S. dollar. We see China rising in power. We see all the other things that it is doing. We see threats of war in the Taiwanese Strait. We see war now in Eastern Europe. We see our economy and the problems we're facing here. Let's pray for peace. Let's pray that rationality reigns. Let's pray that God's grace prevails. The Lord told St. Faustina, the world will have no peace. It'll have no peace until it turns with trust to my mercy. And we got to pray for that. I saw a news report, too, that Christian leaders in Jerusalem, they just issued a joint statement on Friday calling for the governing authorities to enhance security of the holy sites as Easter approaches. And I'll just share this quote for you. I know a lot of people journey to Israel this time of year. I'm sure you're going to be fine. But if you've seen the streets fill, in fact, on Thursday, if you can join me in the broadcast here, Holy Thursday, I'm going to have a Catholic Christian who lives in the Holy Land, who guides people over there. He's going to join me live to give us a look at what Holy Thursday was like in the time of Christ, but also to give us a perspective on what's now unfolding. And you'll hear from him a perspective you will not get anywhere else. So he's going to be live in studio with me coming up this Thursday. But let me share with you what they wrote. They said this. They said, as we've all seen in recent months, escalating violence has engulfed the Holy Land. Local Christians in particular have increasingly suffered adversities similar to the ones in which St. Peter wrote, citing the first letter to Peter. Some churches, funeral processions, and public gathering venues have become targets of attack. Some of our holy sites and cemeteries have been desecrated, and some of our ancient liturgies, such as Palm Sunday procession and the Holy Fire ceremony, have been closed off to thousands of worshipers. This has happened despite the fact that they have agreements with the government on these issues. So need to pray for peace over there. I mean, what's the hallmark of the evil one? Right? It's division, right? It is division. And we're seeing it at every level. What disengages him? Our prayers and our sacrifices. We're entering the holiest time of the year. And I just want to spend so much time in prayer this time of year. You know, I just want to spend time with the Lord. I'm going to beg for his mercy. I invite you to join me in that. I just saw a report that Congressman Chip Roy of Texas, and there were some other Republican lawmakers, they issued a letter. They demanded that Congress defund the FACE Act. Now, we've talked about the FACE Act in the past. You'll remember this, right? It's a law under which this guy Mark Houck and dozens of other pro-life activists have been charged just in the past year. And this letter, it addressed the four lawmakers drafting an appropriation bill that would include enforcing the FACE Act. The FACE Act, if you want me to decode the acronym, it stands for Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances, right? And they're saying that they want, they request that they include language that would prohibit funding for the Department of Justice to enforce the FACE Act. And such language would probably get passed in the House. Whether or not that would survive, the Senate, I don't know. That's a whole nother thing. The Senate Committee Conference, we'll see. But we'll see. I'm glad we're putting it forward. It's been abused. The FACE Act, I think, has been abused. It's been targeting pro-lifers. It's been targeting Christians. I haven't seen it used very effectively against any other group. Two governors have signed controversial bills. Ron DeSantis of Florida. I don't know if you heard about this or not. He signed what's called a constitutional carry law. It means that you can carry a concealed firearm without having to get a permit. You don't have the audio, Patrick? No, there was a little package on this I wanted to run for you. I don't know how you feel about that. Again, carrying a concealed firearm without having to get a permit. A lot of people are pro that, others not. DeSantis is on board in Florida with that. Glenn Youngkin, who's out of Virginia, he signed a bill that would prohibit the government from setting unequal restrictions on houses of worship in case of an emergency. And I really like this. Bravo, Governor Youngkin. I'm very grateful for this. Youngkin's predecessor, remember this guy, Ralph Northam? He's the guy who put on the blackface and, he never stepped down from office. Northam had restricted gatherings of 10 or more people for what he called non-essential purposes, like going to church. Like going to church was non-essential in their opinion. Well, Youngkin now signed a bill prohibits the government from setting unequal restrictions. For example, if you can go to work and have X or go to a ball game or do something else, that should all hold true for what happens within the houses of worship. And today, this is another big issue. My colleague here, Patrick Alog, who's producing the show today, I saw his little sticker on his shirt. He says, I voted today. Today is voting day in both Chicago. There's a huge mayoral race taking place there. We'll see how that shakes out. Both those candidates are incredibly liberal, but you know, one's for defunding the police, the other isn't. I mean, there's a lot to parse there. I won't get into that race. But I just discovered that this race that's taking place in Wisconsin, I'm not sure if you're familiar with this race for the Supreme Court. It has become the most expensive judicial race in our country's history. And it's happening right now. I don't know if you knew, if you heard anything about that. And Patrick, you may have to help me out with Daniel Kelly, I know, is running. Janet, is it Protasevich? Is that how you say her last name? Protasevich? I think it is. She's facing off against Dan Kelly for a vacancy on Wisconsin Supreme Court. And abortion, of course, is a major factor in the election. The court docket included an 1849 law against abortion that went all the way back into effect once the Dobbs decision overturned Roe v. Wade. So they're now looking at a law that defends life. It goes back to 1849. Think about our country then, right? And this Protasevich is known to be pro-abortion and has been endorsed by Hillary Clinton. Dan Kelly is considered to be more supportive and of pro-life arguments and is endorsed by Wisconsin Right to Life and Wisconsin's Political Action Committee. So the race underway, I'm not going to tell you who to vote for. Certainly cannot endorse a candidate on air. I can only help you with principles. But if you are listening in the state of Wisconsin, really important for you to get out and to vote. Really, really important to let your voice be heard, okay? And this race actually has, I believe, national implications. And maybe we'll talk about that in the future. We'll see how it ultimately goes. Patrick, do you have audio on this? All right. Patrick's telling me he's got a nice little package for you. Here's a little bit more on what's happening in Wisconsin.
A lot has changed in the last year following the Supreme Court's historic ruling on abortion last summer. In many conservative-leaning states, new restrictions are now in effect. In many liberal-leaning states, access is a bit easier. But there have been political impacts, too. For instance, races and elections that before you may have never paid attention to are now suddenly very important. And nowhere in the country is that more on display this week than in the state of Wisconsin, where on Tuesday a not-so-typical spring election is taking place. The future of abortion access in the state could be decided. Let's get you caught up on what's happening. In Wisconsin, the state Supreme Court has seven justices on it, and the public elects them. Right now, it's a 4-3 conservative majority. Last year, the court backed a law from 1849 banning abortion. But now, one of the conservative justices is retiring. That makes control of the court up for grabs. If a liberal-leaning justice wins, abortion access could be restored. If a conservative wins, existing abortion bans would likely stay. Democrats and Republicans have spent millions informing voters that Janet Protasevich is the liberal-leaning candidate and that Dan Kelly is conservative-leaning.
The money has been massive. We're talking $30 million and counting.
If you don't live in Wisconsin, there are still lessons you can learn from this week's election. For one, the results will be the latest gauge of how Americans feel about reproductive rights. The other lesson? Expect contests for judges and justices in your state to get even more political. Barbara Lee, perhaps, feels like you.
Just ridiculous how partisan everything has become.
Joe St. George, Scripps News, Washington.
Well, we'll see how that shakes out again. Wisconsinites, I'm giving you a big call, big reminder, not too late to go out and to vote. Do your due diligence and find that election booth near you and let your vote be heard. Chicago, you got a mayoral race. I think it's just Cook County, right, that's voting on the mayoral race, right, Patrick? So,
City of Chicago.
City of Chicago.
Not even, yes.
Correct. The city of Chicago. Yeah, just get out there and do your part, all right? I think voting is so important. I think we do our nation a disservice when we do not get out there and exercise that great privilege and that great right. My producer Patrick was saying to me today, well, you know what? He says, I went out and voted. Less people that are out there means my vote counts a little bit more. Well, I guess it's true. If they share your views, so we'll see. Hey, let me bring you up to speed on the president. Professor Ryan Barrio is going to be stopping by here for the first time in American history. A former president has been arrested and charged with felonies. And this has erupted and has created a real division amongst a lot of different Americans. Donald Trump flew up to Manhattan yesterday. He was in his Mar-a-Lago estate, turned himself in this morning, or just, I guess, about an hour ago, to a Manhattan courthouse after being indicted by this grand jury. And grand jury reports are supposed to be secret until they're unveiled in a court proceeding. But somebody leaked the fact that Trump, you'll be facing not just one or two charges, but 34. That's exactly what happened. Andy McCarthy, who's from National Review, he pointed out, you know, this comes after federal prosecutors decided not to indict Trump on the very same matter. So now, what's this all about? It involves paying out $130,000 in hush money to Stormy Daniels. She was a porn star, a $150,000 payment to a former Playboy model, a girl named Karen McDougal. And these are all over alleged affairs, charges which Trump actually denies. And in this country, you're innocent until you're proven guilty. But the charges aren't really over that. But really, whether or not Trump covered the payments up as legal expenses to his then lawyer, Michael Cohen, his current lawyer, a guy named Joe Tacopina, or Tacopina. Yeah, Tacopina is his name, I'm pretty sure. He says this isn't even going to go to reach trial, right? He says, I don't think the case is going to see a jury, he told ABC the other day. He says, I think it's going to go away, you know, on paper. So still, you got the optics of a president of the United States being drugged into a courthouse. I'm joined today by Dr. Ryan Barrio. Always love having him here with us today. He is a professor of political science at Miami University of Ohio and the author of a number of books. I think he wrote about 10 of them. But his latest book was Tough Times for the President, and he's here with us today. Doctor, you're going to have to add another chapter or two to your book. Good afternoon.
Thank you. I'm glad to be with you.
Yeah, I thought of you. We wanted a presidential scholar to join us today just to unpack this and to give us a perspective on, you know, the gravity of this and the historicity of this. You know, the charges have been set forth now. What do you make of the charges? And maybe just give us some context. What does this mean today? What's it going to mean in the future in terms of the history books?
Well, it's certainly important. Of course, Donald Trump's not the first president to be charged with a crime. Bill Clinton was charged with, well, he came close to being charged. It was the Clinton case was very elaborate. As you know, Clinton was impeached over lying, among other things, lying to a grand jury, committing perjury. He did later make a deal with the prosecutor to avoid actually being indicted for perjury. And there was a case in which he agreed, and he made a deal. He agreed to surrender his legal license for 5 years and pay a pretty hefty fine. So this isn't the first time. We've kind of been through this to some extent before. What's unique about this is it's the first time a president's been arrested, or a former president has been arrested. And that makes it interesting because you have the idea of the president showing up and having to be booked. Now, he was spared a lot of the kind of ordinary indignities that go along with an arrest. He wasn't handcuffed. Right. There was no mugshot. He was treated, he was treated with respect. Part of it is you don't have to worry about him going anywhere because he's surrounded by Secret Service agents all the time, so they know exactly where he is at all times.
Right.
And there's no concern that he won't turn himself in. I think that.
Let me interrupt you for just a second there.
It's not completely unique.
Yeah, not having the mugshot and not being cuffed. Why even fingerprint him? He's the president of the United States. I'm sure they have his DNA. They have his fingerprints and all that already. Why not just go there and why not even do this remotely? Why do you have to drag this guy before the court?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think there's been a lot of talk about the motives of the prosecutor. In this case, certainly there must be. I can't read the prosecutor's mind, but clearly there has to be some kind of political motive involved, or the attempt to demonstrate to sort of make Donald Trump an example. Previous prosecutor, you mentioned earlier the federal prosecutors, but also the previous Manhattan District Attorney, Cyrus Vance Jr., declined to prosecute Trump on a similar charge because he didn't think he'd be able to make a case in court. And so there's always these tough, prosecutors make these judgments. And one thing about prosecutorial judgments is that you can't second guess them because they're pretty much, there's no, you can't punish a prosecutor for making a, deciding to prosecute somebody or deciding not to prosecute someone. So it creates this, it gives them a, an awful lot of opportunity to to go ahead and prosecute somebody if they really think they've got, if they got enough evidence to convince a grand jury, which really isn't hard.
Right
to
now,
do.
Yeah, that's what they say. I'm just curious about the optics of this, what it means, not just nationally, but even globally. You have charges that are brought by a state district attorney who ran on the promise, if you elect me, I'm going to bag this guy. And, you know, I'm just wondering if the White House, and I don't know if this is even a fair question, is the, using the DA to get at a political rival. Are there political entities that are using this as political retribution? If that's the case, it's absolutely horrific. I mean, it's a, to me, a terrible law. But how do you see it?
Well, I don't think it runs to some kind of conspiracy such as that. But I do think that Alvin Bragg sees it as an opportunity to sort of make Trump pay for something. You know, but Trump's been a figure in New York for a long time. And he has, you know, I remember years ago, as you well do too, you know, when Trump was still just a New York figure, but he was an incredibly flamboyant and controversial figure in the city of New York. And he spent a lot of time in court, mostly in civil court, suing and being sued and declaring bankruptcy several times. And so he kind of, in some ways, I mean, you know, whether the charges are will result in some kind of conviction, we don't know. But, you know, he's certainly no stranger to a courtroom.
Yeah, that's for sure. So, you know, a little history here, too. I know Ford was widely pilloried for giving a pardon to Richard Nixon. In hindsight, was Ford right to do that? I know President Biden has been totally quiet about all this. Can't stand Trump, at least from what it looks like. How does this work with presidents? And, okay. And what's this also mean in terms of arresting
question.
A president?
Yeah. It means, a president's pardon power only extends to federal crimes. So even if Biden wanted to pardon Trump, he couldn't pardon him in this case because it's a state crime.
Yeah, interesting.
The other thing is that I certainly don't think that Joe Biden, after, if you look at all the things he said about Donald Trump, he shares the view that Trump needs to pay. Well, anyway, the other thing is, it's because we're talking now about an arrest. This is this is the new territory. Is he's being arrested, but at the same time, it is, had Bill Clinton been invited, we probably would have seen a similar kind of circumstance. Mm-hmm. He would have been required, as anybody who's under indictment, to show up and to report to the court. To the booking authorities and that sort of thing. Now, I think we can, you know, on the one hand, that is important, but on the other hand, I think we can make too much of it.
Yeah, in
the sense that this is the normal way the process works. Yeah. And they actually gave him a lot of, you know, like we said, they gave him a certain amount of deference because they didn't handcuff him and they didn't mugshot him. What he had to do was to appear in court and enter a plea. And that, you know, all kinds of famous and wealthy people have been forced to do that before, and lots of politicians. It's just unusual for the president to have done that before. But we've had, you know, we've had federal judges in prison. We've had members of Congress in prison. We've had state governors in prison. We've had a former, you know, usually they avoid, many of them avoid prison, but they end up going to court and having to pay fines or get something like that.
Yeah. The merits of this particular case, what do you think is going to happen? Thrown out? As his attorney claims?
I think his lawyers are going to drag it out for months with various kinds of motions, and they're going to try to get it thrown out. They're going to try to get it disqualified in some way. They're going to probably try for a change of venue to someplace outside of New York City.
Yeah.
And you know, I suspect that they're going to. The thing that I think they're looking for is to try to drag it out as long as they can. If it drags in, it will easily drag into next year. And if it drags into next year and there is a trial next year, whether it's a jury trial or a bench trial, it could backfire on Bragg. It could only help. It might actually increase sympathy for Trump.
Interesting. Well, Professor, I'm always grateful for your time. I
appreciate it.
I am really grateful for it.
I'm happy to do it.
Just one final thought here, and I've got to take a quick break here.
Definitely.
And I don't know whether this is going to have any impact. How are Americans? What's your view of it? I mean, you've been following this. You know, mm-hmm. the president. You've written a book on him. How do you think the American people respond to the indictment? Any impact at all will help him in his election or hurt him?
I read an interesting comment, which I think is probably accurate. It is that the likely effect of this will be to increase Trump's chances of winning the Republican nomination, but to decrease his chances of winning the election.
Yeah, so true.
Because the people who are not loyal Trump supporters, mm-hmm. or who are not sympathetic to him, are only going to be repelled by this. They're just going to find this one more reason to hate Trump.
A lot of people are taking joy in it. You see some of the commentators.
Yeah. A lot
crazy.
Of people are taking joy in it. You know, I always think that these kind of things ought to be taken very soberly.
Yeah, me too.
I always remember the famous story of when the House Judiciary Committee voted to recommend articles of impeachment on Nixon. Peter Rodino, who was an old New Jersey Democrat, after the vote was taken, and Rodino had voted with the majority, he went back into his office and he called his wife and he said, we just recommended to impeach the president. And then he broke down in tears because he thought it was such a grave action to take.
Wow.
And so it's something you should do very soberly. And unfortunately, we live in a time when people think it's all a political game and it's all about attack and response and not something to be done. Things aren't serious.
Well, you and I hopefully will talk again soon. Again, thanks for your time. I appreciate it. People want to get your book, by the way. What's the best way to connect?
They can look on Amazon.
All right, good. Check it out there. And you and I will talk soon. Professor, thank you. Have a great Holy Week, okay?
Thank you. You too.
God bless you. That's Dr. Ryan Barrio. You can check his book out. His last name is spelled Barilleaux. So if you're trying to do a quick Google search, that's how you spell it. Stay with me when we come back. We'll talk a little bit more. What was the Lord doing on Tuesday of Holy Week? Have you ever thought about that? Let's take a look at the spiritual events straight ahead. This hour is sponsored by Creative Planning. How is your Catholic faith influencing your financial future? More info, including disclosures at creativeplanning.com/Catholic Focus.
Your daily dose of faith, hope, and charity. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, thanks for joining me. We're about 25 minutes away from the Chaplet of Divine Mercy. I just think it's so important to invite others to pray the chaplet with us. The Lord promised special protection for you, special blessing for those who would promote His mercy. And I think it's a great way to reach out to that child of yours that's having a trouble, you know, having difficulty right now, and they just need a little extra prayer. Just have them listen. Never know how it can change them. Maybe it's that legal challenge that's facing you or the financial hardship that your business is going through. Let's all join together. We'll pray the Chaplet of Divine Mercy. We'll stand on the promises that the Lord gave to St. Faustina. We'll invoke His mercy, and we'll pray together. I don't know about you. I can open the phones. We can certainly talk about it. What is your spiritual sense? What are you feeling right now about what's going on, maybe in the world of your life? I was saying to Maggie the other day, I said, I feel like an oppression. I was saying this to her the other day. I feel like there's an oppressive spirit around us. Now, we've been talking a lot about everything from the occult to, you know, the aggressive nature of Satan in the world. And who knows? Maybe it's a retaliatory spirit. But then again, I don't feel, you know, there's no fear. I don't feel any demonic spirit. I feel in my heart, and this could be a grace, a greater desire to pray. Like, I just want to get before the Blessed Sacrament. I want to spend more time in prayer. And I don't know if that's the case for you or not. I kind of feel, I don't know, that there's something going on in the spiritual realm, in the spiritual dynamic. And I can't think of a better time to dive into prayer than Holy Week, right? Then tomorrow, Spy on Wednesday. We've got Holy Thursday, Good Friday upon us. And then before you know it, we're going to be celebrating the resurrection, right? And then Divine Mercy Sunday. We'll be on the eve of that. So we have got a lot coming up in the days ahead. So I invite you to pray. If you can, do a quick search on the Relevant Radio app. In fact, I'll give you just a quick plug. If you're looking for adoration or mass or confession, if you go on our app, there's a place that I think you can plug into, and you'll be able to get plugged into that church near you. So find out where adoration is. Find out where your services are. And go ahead and get connected, okay? Just a personal thought. And say a prayer for me, too, if you don't mind, okay? I feel this way. Maggie's out today. She's actually called out sick. And I'm thinking, uh-oh. Maybe it's nothing spiritual at all. Maybe we're both coming to hell or something, right? I mean, Maggie called out today. But I would appreciate your prayers and for my family. We're always grateful for that, all right? But we are right now in the holiest week of the Christian calendar. And it used to be that the culture would help make Holy Week truly holy. I don't know. Some of you may remember the processions, the praying of the Stations of the Cross, all those penance services, a lot of other ways that entire towns, cities would mark this as a time unlike any other during the year. This is no longer the case. And you know this. I mean, we're living in a culture that is really rejecting God, and you could easily slide through Holy Week without even giving it a second thought. I mean, if you didn't have your formation, you didn't have faith, there's not a whole lot on television, right, or in the news. You're not seeing a whole lot about it. It's another ordinary week. The only thing that might tip you off, that something is different is, all the signs in the stores and the ads for Easter that's coming up this Sunday, in which you'd have to buy the Easter candy, right? But we're Christians. And I think we need to take the initiative and make Holy Week truly holy in our lives and in our families. And ultimately, that'll ripple out into the rest of the world. So I thought today, I'd invite Monsignor James Shea back to the microphone and get his take on all this. He's the president of the University of Mary in Bismarck, North Dakota. You can find him at umary.edu or just come to mary.com. Great, great institution. And we can talk a little bit about that as well. But Monsignor, thank you for your time. I know it's a busy week for you. I'm grateful to have you here. All right.
Hello. I'm so sorry. I lost contact for a second. Can you hear me?
I can now, Monsignor. It's great to have you. I hope you're having a great Holy Week.
Blessed Holy Week to you too. Thanks.
So I'm sure it's a busy one for you. So I was just saying I'm grateful for your time. A couple things here. How do you see where we are today? Just in terms of the culture, and how can we really make this holy, not just for ourselves, but for our families and the culture at large?
Well, so as you said, Drew, this is the holiest week of the year. In other words, we're preparing as Christians and as Catholics to enter into, and indeed we already have entered into with Palm Sunday, into the very holiest and most momentous days of the year. And so these are days in which we accompany Jesus, in which we walk with him to Calvary, and then to the tomb, and then to the resurrection. And so this is the story of our whole life writ small, and indeed writ large at the same time. There's a great drama which is unfolding, and it's a drama that we participate in. And it's important for us not to check out, not to be pulled away or distracted by all of the worldly concerns that sort of crowd us in during this time. This is a solemn week. Even here on Holy Tuesday, this is a solemn week for us to step away from all of the distractions of our lives and enter deeply and humbly into the Lord's great mystery of our salvation. Our culture is a culture of distraction. I think you agree with me.
Absolutely.
I mean, we're so pulled into worldly concerns constantly. As a result, we lose any sense for the invisible realities and truths which are just behind all things. And so that becomes a great sorrow for us in the midst of our culture. So we and our families and our friends and all of those who we're involved with, who we're walking and living this life with, we need ourselves to be recollected and be an encouragement of recollection to all those others. that's, I think, how we can best prepare to enter into the Triduum.
My guest today is Monsignor James Shea. If you want to join us too, you can dial in 888-914-9149. I know you've been to the Holy Land several times, Monsignor. I thought it'd be kind of nice to also just give those who are listening a look at maybe what Christ was doing on this Holy Tuesday and what will unfold in the days ahead, and give us a perspective, you know, if you don't mind.
Yeah, well, we hear it in the readings of starting really last Friday. All of the readings in daily Mass constitute a kind of drumbeat in which Jesus is drawing closer and closer to his trial, his condemnation, and his crucifixion. And so you kind of see the enemies of Jesus begin to circle around him more tightly, more tightly, more tightly. And so there are a series of dramatic things which happen. And on Holy Tuesday, traditionally, this is the day of the Olivet Discourse. And so he's looking upon Jerusalem. He's weeping over Jerusalem. He's predicting the destruction of the temple. He's speaking about how the son sent to the vineyard is killed, of course, which is him being slain by his own nation. And so there's a kind of high drama which is happening. And of course, then tomorrow is Spy Wednesday, and it's called Spy Wednesday because that's the day traditionally in which we mark the betrayal of Judas. That would have been the day on which he went to the authorities and offered to sell Jesus to them for 30 pieces of silver. And so there's just a lot of there's a lot of darkness that's circling around Jesus. And yet in the midst of that, our invitation is to stay with him, not to abandon him, not to run away, but to be loyal and true and faithful in our hearts to our true king. Even though the rest of the world can't see him, we remember when he entered into Jerusalem on Palm Sunday, and we keep the hosannas in our throats.
Amen to that. All right, Monsignor, stay with me. I'm going to take a short pause. When we come back, we can talk a little bit more. My guest today, Monsignor James Shea, and we'll be back with more right after this.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. Connect with Drew on the Relevant Radio app.
Hey, looking for a new job? How about one that offers opportunities for spiritual, social, and charitable growth? Our sponsor, Catholic Order of Foresters, is hiring new agents today. Visit relevantradio.com/forester. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, thanks for joining me. Chaplet is about 12 minutes away. As I said, call somebody and know. We'll be sure to pray together coming up as we are now making our way through Holy Week. I don't know what your plans are. I was saying a little bit earlier, I just feel this sense in my soul, my heart, my spirit, to really want to spend some time in prayer this Holy Week. I think it's going to be an extraordinarily powerful and grace-filled time. I invite you to do the same thing. If you've not been to confession, get to confession, okay? And if you've been away from the Lord, I invite you to come back. I mean, maybe just sit before the Lord in the Blessed Sacrament. There's lots of different penance services. There's Eucharistic adoration. There's some wonderful events that'll take place over the course of the next several days, of course, culminating on Good Friday and, of course, Easter Sunday. I'm joined today by Monsignor James Shea. He's a friend of the program here, the president of the University of Mary in Bismarck, North Dakota, doing some great stuff. And I'll put a plug in for his university. If you want to check out cometomary.com or just go to umary.edu. Learn about some of the great programs that they've got underway. I think you'll find it's incredibly cost-effective. And I often talk about being well-formed, how we need well-formed politicians and medical doctors and, you know, people who hold high office. We need people who have proper, you know, disposition, both in their heart and their mind. The University of Mary certainly will do that for you. And the cost, if you are a parent saying, hey, I'm going to help my kid, you'll be surprised at how reasonable it is. Monsignor, it's good to have you with us. I want to talk a little bit about the U of M, if we could, in a minute. But before I do that, let's grab a quick call for you. Richard's in Woodbridge, sure. Illinois. He's got a question for you. Hi, Richard.
Hey, good afternoon, fellas. Thanks for put me on.
You got it.
I just finished reading for the second time from Christendom to Apostolic Mission. And one thing, Monsignor, you talk about is the Christianity involves the revelation of a world that is largely invisible. And I'm just trying to figure out how can we get people to believe that in the things that are invisible when they are trying to live the best they can in this world, but they're not seeing anything coming through from it.
Yeah. Well, Richard, this is a perfect question to be asked during this Holy Week, because what the Lord is trying to do in all the drama of his death and his resurrection is to awaken people. And in fact, this is true all through his preaching. Every time that you hear the Lord preach, he's trying to awaken people to the realities of the invisible world. And Christianity and Catholicism itself constitutes a fierce allegiance to the invisible world. In other words, the reason the martyrs die, the reason that they shed their blood, the reason that such bravery and heroism arise out of the soil of the Christian faith is because people have come to become convinced in their hearts and in their souls that there's something more than that which they can see. Now, how does one awaken people to that? Well, that's the age-old question of evangelization. But I think in our day, and you see this in the pages of From Christendom to Apostolic Mission, in that small text that you referenced, Richard, one of the key ways to do it is to introduce people to the great sweeping narrative drama. In other words, people are dying because they're so bored by their lives. The world makes all kinds of promises to them, but really in the end, all the pleasures of the world, all the wealth, all the convenience, all the luxuries, it just anesthetizes people from the real experience of their life, of the deeper and more lasting things of life. And so I think to invite people into that great epic drama is the thing to do. And if you don't think that would work, if you think that it's too like airy or conceptual to say that, look at how people are drawn to epic story in our time. So think, for instance, of The Lord of the Rings or The Chronicles of Narnia, or think in the secular realm of Marvel Comics or the Star Wars films or Game of Thrones or any of those kinds of things. People are really drawn into it because deep in our souls, we know that there's a great drama happening and that our lives are meant to be a part of it. And Christianity offers that, but it's happening right beyond our sight, right behind the scenes, and the world of faith opens that whole epic drama up to people. And so I think that it's an invitation to courageous sight that goes beyond what one can simply see. I hope that's a beginning of an answer for you, Richard.
Oh, absolutely. And just to what you said about the martyrs there and the boredom that's so prevalent in the world today, I greatly appreciate your response. Thank you.
God bless you. Thank you.
Thank you. Hey, Monsignor, how can people get that book?
Well, you know, it's on Amazon, but none of us want to make Jeff Bezos any richer than he already is. So you can just go to the University of Mary's bookstore online, and it's a dollar cheaper there than it is on Amazon, right. And the shipping is still free.
Wow.
So the University of Mary's bookstore.
Why don't you give the title for everyone?
From Christendom to Apostolic Mission.
All right, From Christendom to Apostolic Mission. Great.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's just a little book that the University of Mary put out in 2020, and it's less than 100 pages.
I love this.
But it's sold many, many copies, and we've never advertised it until this very moment.
I like being a first. Right? Isn't that amazing? Yeah. Those little books are the great. I love, you know, the 100-page reads. You can get through them pretty quick, and they're often so rife and filled with such such knowledge. You know, I've read a book on Providence like that as well. So, all right. So, University of Mary, is that the best place to go? That'd be comethemary.com or umary.edu. I only have a minute or two left, but I'd love to hear what you're doing. What are you doing for the Triduum? It's a special time.
We have the Triduum on campus. I think we'll bring something like 15 into the church and baptize a few. Wow. And our chapels are full, 650 or more students will be there, standing room only, in our large chapel for Holy Thursday, for Good Friday, for the Easter Vigil. And then we have a mass on Easter Sunday as well. And I'll go down to my hometown, which is only 38 miles from campus, and baptize my new little niece who was just born last week, Therese Michelle Shea.
A beautiful name. That's great. Well, hey, have a if we don't talk, have a blessed Triduum and it's a really joyful Easter. I look forward to talking to you again soon, Monsignor. And one day come out and see that great university. I hope people will check it out as well. So come to Mary.com. Best place to go, umary.edu. God bless you, Monsignor.
God bless you, too, and have a blessed Triduum and a happy, joyful Easter.
Thank you. It's Monsignor James Shea, and I would encourage you to check out the university. I've yet to get there. I want to go and see it. He keeps saying, Drew, you got to come out. You got to come and see it. I'd love to do that. I really would. I'd love to go and see it. But if you really want an affordable education, it's really the place to go. I've heard nothing but rave reviews about it. I know a lot of the people that are teaching there, so... time flies too, doesn't it? I mean, so often our kids go to these Catholic institutions and they come back without their faith. That doesn't happen at the University of Mary. In fact, I had lunch one time. My kids were, I've got five kids, right? They're all about a year apart, maybe a little bit more than that. But I had four in high school at the same time. I had four in college at the same time, right? Four at the university level. And I remember having lunch with a friend, and he was just sending his daughter off. He was looking at Catholic University, and we're just talking about these different institutions. And he was concerned about sending his daughter to, he mentioned, I won't mention them on the air, a couple of these different Catholic universities. And I hear right, sending your kids to school in places like that, and they come back without their faith. And it is true. You can lose it anywhere. I mean, you've really got to make sure your kids are well-formed before they even get to any university level. You see all this DEI and woke type of stuff that's being taught to kids right now, and it's really a challenging environment for a developing child. So my advice as a parent, especially going through those difficult years, kids are exploring, trying to know who they are, where, you know, what they're intended to do. They got to make decisions about their future and their vocation and career. I mean, do you really know when you graduate from high school what you want to do the rest of your life? And it can be overwhelming for some kids. Just pray for your kids. I mean, really, it's all we can do as parents. When they become adults, you've planted the seeds in their heart already. Right, I hope you did. I hope you've given them the example of what it means to be prayerful, to understand the beauty and the power and the importance of the sacraments. But ultimately, in the end, you know, they're going to be adults. And all you can do at that point in time is put your trust in God and pray that those seeds that you planted will be watered by your prayers and God's great grace. That's it. That's my advice for any parent who's worried about their kids. We are just a moment or two away from the Chapel of the Divine Mercy. If you want to join us, I'll give you the telephone number. You can get in now. Phone lines tend to fill up pretty quickly. Numbers here, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. And try to get as many calls as I can in. A couple intentions that I will ask you to pray for when we come back. Father Simon actually stopped by the studio here. He's here today in the other studio and said, hey, can you ask everyone to pray for these intentions? So I'll get them on the air, and we'll get your intentions on the air. Patrick Alog will be filling in for Maggie, and he'll be taking your intentions off of the off our Twitter account as well. So if you want to send us a tweet, it's at Drew Mariani Show, at Drew Mariani Show. You can send me one to my personal account, at Drew Mariani. Very simple, right? You got the personal, Drew Mariani, the show, Drew Mariani Show. Not that complicated. Follow us on all of our social media. But above all, let's pray. It's a special time of the year, and it's Holy Week. Let's invoke God's mercy. We'll do that when I return.